Hello there, everybody, and welcome to Geek Therapeutics Podcast. I am Cornell Kritz, and I am here with my co-host, Alicia. I'm going to let her go ahead and introduce herself, and then we'll get into...
Hi, everybody. And I just cut you
You're
off.
You're perfectly
I'm so
fine.
Sorry.
It's our first episode.
I love you, Cornell. I love you, too. It is. My name's Alicia, and I am a therapeutic game master and social worker with our amazing team here at Geek Therapeutics, creating amazing content coming to you from our houses. So that's who I am right now, at my house. With you.
Yeah. So this is a brand new format we're testing out, and we're going to be bringing our interviews to you as a podcast every week. And to this very first guest we have on this new format is the one and only Nick Anderson, correct if I'm not mistaken. And so Nick, take a moment and tell us just a little bit about yourself and how you came into the geek culture.
Okay. Well, like you guys said, I'm Nick Anderson. I currently work in mental health in direct support, primarily working with people in group homes, supported apartments types of, you know, those types of situations. Basically just supporting them in their growth and development, working towards positive interventions to move them forward in life and hopefully gain some recovery. Before that, I worked for quite a number of years in intellectual disabilities. And so, yeah, it's kind of become a passion for me. I also instruct classes that provide the certifications people need for that. And geek culture, I mean, oh man, I've pretty much been immersed in it from day one. You know, my grandfather showed me a book on Greek mythology back when I was probably seven. And I was hooked on mythology and all things fantastical ever after. You know, grew up watching the original Star Wars movies. You know, D&D came in probably middle school age. So, I mean, literally it's been a part of my life throughout my life, as far as I can remember back.
Well, tell us where we can find your stuff and what kind of games you enjoy in your downtime when you're not working as a therapeutic professional.
Okay. Well, quite a few different games. It kind of depends on my mood. In fact, I've been told my mood is very easily gauged on what kind of games I'm playing at the moment. Usually when I'm in a fairly calm, thoughtful mode, I tend to play things that are a little more exploration based. Valheim has been a big one for me here of late, not only for the exploration, but just the building and that piece of it, kind of creating my own narrative. Other types of games, you know, obviously Dungeons and Dragons is a huge piece for me, both old school tabletop over the computer, face-to-face video game versions of it. I've always loved D&D. You know, I've played a few other tabletop games in the past, Star Wars versions, things like that. But, you know, it really just depends on what's there and what my mood is, I guess. But fantasy, sci-fi typically are the basis for most of them.
You want to jump in with anything, Alicia?
Nick, you said that you have been playing tabletop games for most of your life. Was there a point in time that you thought to yourself, I wonder if tabletop games are anything more than just scratching some numbers, rolling some math clickety-clackety dice, and going out with friends looking at a graph table? Was there ever a moment?
You know, there was, and it was more retrospective. When I got more into adulthood, but I realized that a lot of my decision-making skills, a lot of my ability to, what's the phrase I'm looking for? To self-advocate, a lot of it came from practicing those types of skills in tabletop games, you know, putting my ideas out there on how to solve this issue or how to negotiate that treaty or, you know, how to keep an ancient black dragon from turning you into a midnight snack, you know, all those fun things. But yeah, it started occurring to me more in adulthood what a benefit playing this game was early on in life. And actually, long before I even came to Geek Therapeutics and found you guys, I was already kind of running a small group amongst some of my clients, mostly just to get some of our more introverted, room-bound types to come out and do something together. And then I found you guys, and it's like this whole extra world has opened up of what can be done. So I had some initial thoughts around it and beliefs about it. And, you know, seeing you guys and going through the course really, you know, really cemented that and expanded upon it.
I really like how you brought up the idea of self-advocacy and that tabletop role playing taught you how to effectively advocate for yourself. And as an individual who works with the mentally disabled and those in group homes, have you been able to get that across in your gameplay to allow those individuals to speak up and advocate for whatever's going on at the table?
Yeah, there's been definite situations where clients have gained some, you know, some skills with that. Also, I found that many of them find a lot of self-reflection in their characters. You know, people who may not have, and forgive me because I'm really trying to have to process this and figure out how to say certain things without giving examples that would step on HIPAA. but, you know, people that maybe, you know, don't have as much emotional connection as would be expected of someone who's considered neurotypical. You know, all of a sudden finding some of those emotional connections through the stories, which is another thing that I've seen in several cases, working with some of my clients. But yeah, the self-advocacy, the willingness to not only learn how to speak for themselves, but also how to listen genuinely to others when they're being spoken to, and the quality of communication skills that they pick up from it. There's just so many benefits. I could kill the entire interview just on that.
I love that, though.
Yeah. Tell us about a game that matters to you, something that helped you through a rough time, gave you support, or stayed with you for whatever reason.
Wow. You know, I'm not sure if it's any one specific game. I will say role-playing games in general, whether tabletop, video games, etc., have always been a shelter for me, a place that I can go and, you know, feel safe, feel like I'm in my space now that other people can't, you know, just jump in and interrupt me. So, I mean, and that goes all the way back to, you know, the days of the original Final Fantasy games, the original Dragon Quest games, the old 8-bit pieces, all the way up through modern games like Skyrim and games like that. So, again, just about anything where I'm slinging spells, swinging swords, and, you know, chasing after the big bad has always been a safe space for me and something that's just kind of reaffirmed a lot of the things that I've learned over time. And yeah, just been a safe space.
Good. What is your earliest memory of a video game? What's that one game that just stands out in your memory that you think back on it and you get that smile that we see on your face right now that our audience can't see? That is from
ear
to ear.
I love it. And that's the one thing. That is the one thing about audio mediums is you cannot see the moment a question is asked and there's just this light bulb effect that hits. And I mean, all three of us across the board smiled, and I swear to you, you can hear it in your headset, and that we just have this like gleam across our teeth. And it's like, dang, there are moments that games and geekdom can bring that pure bliss across someone's face, and it can just be, it's radiating and it can be heard everywhere. I love it.
It is. It's awesome. No,
go ahead and answer
that's
question,
just great.
Nick.
I mean, well, honestly, the smile kind of crossed my face because now you're really kind of forcing me to date myself here a bit. God, earliest memory. I mean, I remember playing the, you know, original Pac-Man on the old tabletop sets, not the reproduced ones, but I mean the ones that had the, you know, multiple stains from soda and, you know, whatever else sitting on Pizza top Hut. Of the glass. Oh yeah, in Pizza Hut. Yeah. You know, I honestly remember playing a Buck Rogers game on the old Commodore 64 computer, the old Atari, playing some of, you know, Asteroids and things like that. Adventure, you know, back in the day, chasing after the keys and the dragons and such. Yep. So yeah, I go back about as far, hell, I think I even had the original Pong at one point in time. So I mean, yeah, I literally grew up right in the age of gaming, and it's early days before it even began to peak where it is now. So yeah, my memories go back quite a ways on that one.
That's awesome.
When you entered into the Therapeutic Game Master program, did you know that gaming was being utilized in this space to help individuals process types of trauma, anxiety, stress, everyday communication, and behavioral issues? Was that something that you knew coming in, or did you learn that throughout your time in the program?
So it wasn't something that I knew was being done on this scale. Literally, I found out about you guys through a lucky chance, through a Facebook thing that just kind of popped up. But I really did believe, based on my own background, in the benefits of it. And I remember having the initial discussions with my supervisors and my managers when I wanted to start providing just a D&D group as a, you know, if nothing more, just something for clients to do. And the look of, in some cases, incredulity, and in other cases, you know, that WTF are you thinking look. And it was kind of funny to be able to, you know, print out the certificate and put that in front of a few people, you know, see the APA stamped on there and all that. It was great. But yeah, I always suspected it could have those benefits, but yeah, I never, you know, I don't have quite the educational background to do with it what you guys have at this point. So I didn't know quite to what extent it could go, but I suspected.
What has been your favorite training to date?
Oh, my favorite training. I mean, I have to say Colin's games were wonderful. The freedom he gave us, I definitely loved that. If I were going to pin down an individual training, and I'm actually kind of surprised by this because I'm not a huge horror fan overall, but the game that we played, Call of Cthulhu. Mm-hmm. And I found that one particularly interesting because even with my beliefs being what they were, I heard horror genre and I'm like, huh? I don't, you know, therapeutic horror. Okay. So are we talking exposure therapy? What are we talking about here? but I really enjoyed how the GM in that particular game really, you know, set the scene and made you feel it and really provided just a lot of good information that helped us get into our characters and actually play them as a role rather than, you know, information on a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. And I think that just for the experience that I and my cohort had and how in depth we got with each other in those characters, that was probably my favorite for that reason.
I want to step back for a second because I think when you made your comment regarding putting your certification on a person's desk, and that APA seal is so important because we do have accreditation through APA and ACE and NBCC. And in those, that brings validity. And when you were in this course and people were looking at you, I can imagine that their faces were tabletop role-playing game has no place in therapy, because I hear it all the time. And when you brought that to them, did you feel that after completing this program, you were validated in knowing that tabletop role-playing can truly be effective for individuals who need to process really anything or learn how to communicate more effectively on any level, not just on a therapeutic level, but just in a day-to-day level, and especially in regard to the clients that you service, because you have a very niche service and community that you're helping, and those individuals are always overlooked when it comes to any type of out-of-the-box therapeutic mm-hmm. programming.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah, it was, it definitely, validated everything that I'd been thinking and I'd already been doing. And in some ways for the ones that went ahead and signed off on everything anyway, it kind of helped validate that, you know, their trust in me too, because like I said, I was doing this to a smaller extent, before I even found you guys. So for them to be able to see that, to see those stamps on there and say, wow, okay, so first of all, Nick isn't completely crazy. but also,
you're not crazy.
Well, you know, give me a few more years in the mental health field, I might be. I always joke that my retirement plan is to go from being a caregiver to a client. But well, let's face it, floor work doesn't pay all that great. It's great work and it pays decently, but it, yeah. Anyway, but yeah, it validated what I was doing and what I intended to continue doing. It validated the people that supported me even when they were questioning it a little bit. You know, and now, I mean, we're actually working on developing a online piece strictly for our clients, to set that up so that they, because obviously we're still under, you know, COVID and all this fun stuff. But to set that up for them to be able to do that, our team of clinicians are all working with me to, you know, tweak things to, you know, the methods that we're using here and such. But I've been keeping them abreast of everything. I might even be sending one or two of them your way for the same training here too, just so they can eat more easily support what I'm doing and understand it a little better.
And that's the clinician you're talking about,
Chris. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I was just going to say, I think that's an amazing symbiotic relationship, because as the person in the home or now currently on Zoom, depending on how you can get in with your clients, and having the clinician who's doing all of their therapeutic sign-offs and what they're doing for the state and how they're getting paid. It's really interesting that that individual is willing to learn more, because that relationship with the two of you could be amazing, and the potential there to grow with your clients is just fascinating to me. And it makes me think of when you're in the therapeutic Game Master program and you're learning how to communicate with individuals whom you might not have ever communicated with before, as they might be struggling or processing through a trauma or an event at the table. Have you been able to use those lessons at your own tables with your clients?
Yeah, to an extent. Again, you know, I'm not a clinician, so I can't really go in there and do more than be supportive of them, let them talk, you know, and from that end. But what I have seen is more the ability for clients to start doing much of what I did when I was younger and realizing when I was older, is processing what just happened in the game, realizing the impact it had on them, and learning how to utilize that to more effectively deal with other situations. Whether it's, you know, emotional breakdown, whether it's, you know, something as simple as learning to, you know, not make choices, you know, on the cusp, but to actually stop and take in information. I remember one client I was running a game for. It was him and one other client, and he got this brilliant idea because he had a feeling they were going to be attacked. So he decided to start climbing up this tree, you know, paladin and full heavy armor and all this. And so I made him have, you know, had him make a dexterity roll, which he failed quite hilariously and took 1 point of damage as he fell on his backside. Which, you know, but it taught a little bit of a lesson. Sometimes you need to pay a little more attention to what you're thinking about doing before you just jump. And it, I'll say for that particular individual, it took a few more similar situations before the lesson kind of sunk home, but eventually it did. And they really started looking at that piece, whenever they started making choices for themselves. And yeah, it was definitely very positive to see that.
I believe we've touched on this a little bit, but to go into a little bit deeper, what is your geek specialty to use with clients?
My geek specialty to use with clients?
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars is always a go-to, just because the beautiful thing about Star Wars, even as diverse and divisive as some of the people within that fandom can be, is there's always core pieces that appeal to people from all walks of life, all levels of history, even socioeconomic status. It really crosses so many boundaries, even culturally, that it really is a go-to for me because, again, you know, whether it's somebody who's really deep into the storytelling and the lore, somebody that just likes the flashy fight scenes, somebody that loves the graphic pieces of like the space combat and what have you, there's something there for almost everybody that they can take it in and make it a part of them. So it's a very good core common place for me to meet people and work with them.
And to keep with the Star Wars track, did you like how Book of Boba Fett wrapped up?
So you know what?
Hold on. Wait. Pause. I'm going to put it out there real fast. If you have not seen the finale of the first season of the Book of Boba Fett, skip ahead like 3 minutes, because I want to get into this, because last night, my mind, I've got a lot of thoughts going on, and let's get into it, Nick, but probably skip ahead 3 minutes because that's probably what we're going to spend on it.
Well, actually, I can spare you here a little bit because I've actually fallen a little bit behind. I've been extremely busy the last few weeks. So I don't have any spoilers for anybody, but I have really enjoyed what they've been doing so far. I will say that I was far more captivated, at least initially, by the memory pieces when he's in the back to tank, so much more so than, you know, taking over, you know, what's going on Tatooine there.
Yeah.
But I have really enjoyed the show so far. It's been a little bit slower than some others, but it's very thought provoking in a lot of ways. And I think one of the most beautiful things that I've noticed in it is the ability for Boba Fett, especially in his memory sequences, to at first have that clash with the Sand People, the cultures, you know, the differences there, and then get to a point where he accepted and took it in and actually integrated himself a little bit with that culture. And again, that's the kind of thing that I really think that the geekdom we all share, regardless of our specific genre interests, what have you, gives us, is it's a cross-cultural place where we can meet each other and have something in common that makes so many other things, you know, mental illness, intellectual disability, cultural differences, whether it's regional or international culture differences. It's a place we can all meet and agree on something. And I think that's a really beautiful piece of what we do with this. I find that there are no words to adequately describe that.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that you've placed it in such a way that reaches a millennia of people, because as you've said, when we have these loves and they're so beautifully told and we can sit around a table and discuss them and find the mental impact that a lot of things that's going on in Boba in those sequences shows, who this man was in the original series and where he's been to now, and this gap of time as we've gone through the entire Star Wars, the Luke saga, and coming out of the Skywalker saga, and learning about where these tiny little characters were that blew up out of nowhere, and to know what is going on with Boba, and to be able to connect that not only to us as fans, but to the greater mental wellness world, I think it's beautiful. And while you say you don't have words for it, I think you said them so eloquently. I do have one question, though. What was the last episode of the Book of Boba Fett that you remember?
like I said, it's been a few weeks. Let's see. I think the last thing I remember, it was his second encounter with the brother and sister, the two huts.
Okay.
Towards the end of it, I think that was the last piece I clearly remember, was him finding out that he was going to have to go deal with things off planet or something like that.
I'll be very excited when you get through to the finale, and I'd like to talk again and maybe just have like a spoiler session and talk about how you feel the story ends and where you think we're going to go with it, because there are some points that I think are really great for mental wellness and communication and understanding. I don't want to say like a word that could give anything away, but understanding things that we deal with every day and are so beautifully depicted inside the Book of Boba. So I'm really excited for you to finish it. It's really,
it is.
Really
cool. I'm going to hold on to my thought on the whole thing in general until we can discuss that again. Well, then in turn, did you hear about the announcement for the Obi-Wan series coming out in May?
I have been following that from rumor to fruition for probably the last few years. Maybe. And yes. I mean, don't get me wrong. I adore the character of Boba Fett, but Obi-Wan, even back to the original three movies, loved that character. Mm-hmm. So to get to see one more run with him, you know, Ewan McGregor coming back to play that. I mean, there's just so many places they can go with
Hayden
that. It's so much.
It's nice to see Hayden come back and embrace the story again. Mm-hmm. After having such similar to Harrison Ford, having a love-hate relationship with it after the prequel trilogy.
I have a love-hate relationship with him as Anakin. So I'm on the fence, and I'm really interested to see what they're going to do with CGI, as they have in Mandalorian. If you finished it, I won't spoil it for anybody, but the CGI that's happened and the crossbody CGI and the dual acting, the tandem acting side by side with Disney. So I'm very, very interested to see how they're going to take two men who, while they have aged gracefully, that's not the visual that I'm expecting something to be done that's catastrophic and amazing. But I have some thoughts, and I won't get into them, but I'm interested to see
it
what
it has come a long way from Tarkin in Rogue One.
So I think the one thing that'll be really nice with that is, and he's mentioned it in a couple interviews that he's done, Ewan, but what's going to be really cool about it is the story that they're telling, from what I understand, he's already just about the perfect age, so that they're not going to have to do a lot with that. He's in that in-between place age-wise between who he was when he was playing it back in the day and, you know, the original portrayal. So
Alec Guinness, yeah.
Yeah, Alec Guinness. Sir Alec Guinness.
I'm very interested. I think that it's going to either make or break 7, 8, and 9, and how the grandson becomes who he is. And I'm very interested to see if there will be any little Easter eggs that come about how mannerisms and how the dark side has taken over. I'm very interested to see where that all goes. So it'll be interesting to talk again, and I get to spend some time with you, Nick, in the future. And so it'll be interesting just to be able to talk about where we thought it would be and where it went. And if we're all like, oh my God, it makes so much sense. Or if we're just like, wow, scratching our head. So I'm very interested in all of that. With that, I mean, I'm interested in a lot of things when it comes to the geek culture, and I find myself prescribing to a lot of other fandoms outside of tabletop role-playing games and things like Star Wars. Do you have any other connections with other fandoms such as anime, the comic books, any genre movies? Do you have something that you just love outside of the tabletop role-playing game world?
Oh, I mean, yeah. You know, I've one in particular, and I know it's kind of a love-hate. You either love them or hate them, but the Elder Scrolls games, I absolutely love that world. And I know they've had some continuity issues over the years, especially, you know, once Bethesda took over and this, that, and the other. but the quality of the storytelling, by and large, has been amazing. Oblivion, as far as I'm concerned, being the best in terms of overall story arc. Skyrim being very, very close. But so I love those. You know, I was into comic books a little bit as a kid. Marvel has become a much bigger thing for me in adulthood now that these movies have been coming out, just because I, you know, as a kid, you don't have the money to go out and get comic books left and right. And, you know, I had those parents that, you know, oh, that's not actually reading, you know, here's, you know, Wuthering Heights, you know, so there's that. But I also do adore some of the classics. Lord of the Rings, I read those all the way back in elementary school. I can't even begin to tell you the elation I felt when I heard they were making the movies when those first were being produced and came out. And to this day, I still will sit down and watch those full extended editions and kill an entire day that way, given the option. So yeah, there's plenty of fandoms outside of tabletop RPGs. You know, many of the Final Fantasy games, like I've mentioned, big for me, especially growing up, because that was a way to play D&D, you know, even back in the day. Another one that I played for a long period of time and really enjoyed, it was probably one of the few MMOs that I ever really got into for a long period, was Dark Age of Camelot. And I really enjoyed that game and what a lot of the, not only storytelling, but collaborative pieces that it brought together. It's been a while since I've played it, but I really did enjoy that and just Arthurian lore in general, which is what drew me there. So yeah, definitely big things outside of just tabletop RPGs.
Then with speaking about Marvel, and this is actually for both of you as people in the mental health arena, what are your thoughts on what they've shown so far for Moon Knight?
You know, I have not had a chance to really, has that been released yet?
It's going to be released this year. They've released two trailers for it so far.
I haven't even saw it. I'm so busy in other things, and I'm still waiting for Morbius to be released. So I really haven't looked at anything.
It's going
to
be a Disney Plus series with Oscar Isaac, and the main character ends up partially possessed by the moon god from Egypt. But in turn, that manifests as him having multiple personalities.
Okay. So I'll let you start. You've got a little bit higher level clinician training than I do before I start jumping in on my thoughts.
So I'm always weary, right? On a TV show. If it was a movie, that's one thing, because access is a little bit more controlled. And because I don't know, I will tell you right now, I don't even know that comic. And so I don't really have any space to speak, but now I'm going to go in and figure out what I can find. But I am always weary, because if it's not done correctly, you can cause trauma for the viewer. And without knowing really what's going on, I don't have an intelligible take on it. I want to know more about it. And I want to make, I would hope that Disney is employing individuals who are clinicians before they're going off and making an entire series about someone with a multiple personality. Movies are one-offs, and if movies go well, then they're expanded. But TV shows live in the ether forever. When you can have a child, go find them, or you can have other people who might not be in the best place, go find them. So I hope that there is a warning, like the shows that have been going on Netflix and Amazon, that there are warnings to them in the beginning for trigger warnings, that there is a number to call if there's something going on. And I would hope that Disney is doing that. And that's really all I can say, since I don't know jack about the character, and I don't know anything about how the moon imbues these personalities onto this individual.
Fair enough. Yeah. Well, at least I gave you guys something to look into.
Yeah. Because I'm vaguely familiar with Moon Knight. I remember seeing a few of the comics growing up, but it was never one that I really got into or followed. So I don't know the background on it enough. And, you know, I wouldn't be able to really touch on that very intelligently without at least having a look at the trailers. The one thing I do know is even if it's done badly, even if it does have some possibly negative impacts, the one thing that comes from that that's positive regardless is it creates a conversation.
Absolutely.
And that is something that we desperately, desperately need. And what I like to see in regards to, many of my clients, talking Marvel, going back to the Iron Man movies and the fallout that Tony Stark had after what happened in Age of Ultron, and the PTSD, the anxiety issues that he was having in that, seeing that explored through a major actor in a major franchise, really opened a lot of conversations. A lot of the clients that I work with that enjoy, various types of geekdom related to that. So again, even whether it's done well or done badly, at least it generates a conversation. And I think that's the one takeaway regardless that we should focus on there.
I agree 100%. With coming to an end, I would like to ask about your greatest takeaway from your time in the Therapeutic Game Master program and what you learned and what you would say to somebody who asks you about this program that, like many people you worked with, just pushed it off. How would you share that with them?
Okay. So I guess my biggest takeaway from it, and honestly, I won't say so much a takeaway from it as more of a reaffirmation just of a belief that I've held for a long time anyway, just more focused in this area, is that you're never going to know it all. Whether it's the rules of a tabletop game, whether it's the mental health field, whether it's life stuff, you're never going to know it all. And there's always going to be someone else there that has a different viewpoint, a different skill set, just a different take on the same skill set that's going to enhance what you already do and make you better. And I think that was probably more so than any one piece of curriculum, what was really beneficial out of that is just that camaraderie. For instance, I still talk fairly regularly with several people from the cohort I was in. We're actually going to be starting a once a month game just for us to reconnect and kind of do those pieces together and kind of, knock the rust off of what we're doing. So there's that. In terms of talking about people or talking to people rather about, what we do with this. I find myself doing that a lot actually. Because honestly, I'm really quite proud of it and proud of what is already being accomplished with this and really what I see being accomplished long-term through this. So really what I talk to them about and how I help a lot of people relate, especially people that might be older that, remember the satanic panic of the 80s and all of that bad press back in the day, is I equate it back to the old, camping game. Everybody sitting around the fire, somebody starts a story, it passes to the next person, they take it over, and it goes all the way around the fire pit until everybody's added to the story. And when you put it into that context for people, it's like, okay, well, wait, now I kind of get this. Now I'm actually kind of interested. And that's when they start to say things like, hey, could I pop in on one of your games and just kind of listen in for a little bit? Sure, why not? Next thing you know, could you maybe just run a game for me for a little bit so I could try it out? Sure, absolutely. Next thing you know, they're playing in games and, so it's really, I don't try to draw a line in the sand and create a battlefield. I try to help people equate something else that they understand and tie it to what I'm doing so that it's not so scary. And I found that that's pretty effective most of the time.
That's awesome. I don't even know what could be better to end on except that point. And I'm so thankful that we got to sit with you and to learn from you and to get to know where you fit in the program and how the program has helped you and as well as your clients and give you that validation in being certified. Certified is important. And having that seal from APA means a lot. And as a social worker, having ACE on any certification that I have means that this is a competency that our boards agree with. And that shows that we are competent in these communities, these cultures, these different services that we provide. And so I'm so thankful that you came on. Is there anything that you would like to plug? Is there a social media account that people can follow you on? Is there anything you're doing outside in your personal world that you'd like to share with the rest of the world?
Well, I mean, you know, I have to put a plug out for my agency, Motivational Services, also known as MOCO. We operate out of Augusta, Maine. You know, again, providing group home services and supported apartment living for people with mental illness of various types. They have been so supportive of, you know, even looking into this. They were the ones that actually put me through the course at my request. You know, they've really done so much, not only for their clients, but to try and further not only support of people in the community, but being willing to try new and effective therapeutic pieces within their program. So I've got to plug them heavily. I wouldn't be talking to you if they hadn't backed me up on this. So definitely got to give them a plug. Other than that, I mean, honestly, between my work and trying to be involved with the Geek Therapeutics, that takes up so much of my time. I don't do a lot of social media. I did a few years ago start a group, and I think that's where you and I initially met, called Out of the Dungeon on Facebook, which was based around these same concepts. Dungeons and Dragons is a therapeutic place for people. And I mean, most of the time it's just, you know, funny memes and, you know, maybe a little bit of a character creation piece or this, that, and the other. But what's more important is it's a place where, you know, people, whether it's professionals or people with living with disorders, can come and meet on an equal playing field. And with that connected piece of Dungeons and Dragons or tabletop RPGs in general. So I'm active there still as a moderator. I've turned over the reins to people that have a little more time on their hands, but I'm still active there here and there when I can. And so yeah, I'll plug that as well. But those are the two big things. That's where I do a lot of my work, aside from, you know, trying to help out with Geek Therapeutics, however, whenever I can.
I love it. And thank you. And I look forward to spending more time with you and getting to know you more in Geek Therapeutics.
Yeah. So again, folks, make sure to follow us on your chosen podcast platforms and keep in touch. We will be running episodes every week with different interviews of not only our certified geek therapists, but also our professional game masters and dungeon masters. And I am Cornell Kritz. And our guest this week has been Nick Anderson, and we've had the very talented and very intelligent Alicia with us today as our co-host. And we will see you guys next week, same time, same channel. Take care.